When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The professional can clear a rail or a counter in less than 3 minutes.
It'd be nice if one could look for a type and say that is a potential shoplifter. In fact, it doesn't work like this at all. Results have shown that pilferage or shoplifting can be done by anybody from any background, any age, any status. There aren't any rules.
We would hand over every case to the guards.
Shoplifting. The crime that's costing millions of pounds a year. Retail stores have an annual turnover of over £760 million in Ireland. At least 1% of that is lost by shoplifting. And what do the shoplifters take? Virtually everything portable, and sometimes things not so portable. They can all be the target of shoplifters. Indeed, the current favourites are tartan kilts and tins of salmon.
You know, the two tins are the same size, one costs almost twice the other. And yet, very often, somebody caught stealing will be stealing the cheaper one because they may have to pay for it, or it may be just what they want and they're in the habit of eating pink rather than red.
Supermarket man Fergal Quinn, who sees the problem this way.
The real problem, and I think that the very definite problem in Dublin City, is the professional team of shoplifters. And every supermarket now, every large supermarket, has security people who know these people fairly well. And the same people may well be, the same professional team, could well be a professional team of pickpockets. And therefore there's a need for strict security at the entrance door of supermarkets to see these people coming in and to know them and recognise them.
How well organised is shoplifting on the whole?
Very well organised. There are possibly about six different teams operating in the city of Dublin alone. These people are all well known to security people working in the city centre. In fact, they're on first name terms.
Very cosy.
Indeed. In fact, there is a light side to it, I'm glad to say, at times. But people are quite capable of doing a tremendous amount of damage if they're let loose in a departmental store or any retail outlet. They only need 3-4 minutes, and a retailer can be minus £400-£500 worth of his stock.
Pauline O'Neill, a store detective on the beat, so to speak, in a big shop, says
the difference between the professional and the amateur, as it were, is the professional can clear a rail or a counter in less than 3 minutes, whereas the amateur takes about maybe anything from 15 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how large the store is. And this is why we have to watch the professional more, because they know what it's all about. The amateur is an amateur.
But how do they get away with the loot?
They sometimes take in refuse sacks, you know, the plastic refuse sacks, and they can fill them in, as I said, less than 3 minutes.
And how do they get them out of the store?
Well, sometimes, depending on if we know them, well, they may leave the bag. Now, sometimes we get the bag. For that, again, they have what we call carriers, and they take them out. They come in, maybe we don't know these people, and they come in and they collect the stuff if we can't find what they filled up, you know, the bags they filled up. So that's how that works.
The professional team could come in, could do a considerable amount of damage before they, you know, considerable amount of damage to either property or to the customer's property as well, before they're noticed. They can be asked to leave then, but they could have a few wallets in their pocket, or they could have a considerable amount of goods. The professional team in general will not try to steal the ordinary, mundane supermarket goods. They will obviously aim for clothing, fashion, and but also aim on occasions at the if they can get away with it.
It must be very hard to hide, though. I mean, I can't imagine somebody going out with an overcoat tucked under their arm.
We had an instance, one occasion, where we had eleven rather expensive coats taken in one swoop. And in effect, the method that was used was one where a team came in And one of the team suddenly caused a fuss at one part of the shop, started to shout and scream that I think the baby had been kidnapped or something that caused everybody in the shop to turn around to see what this party was screaming about. And when everybody turned around, the coats disappeared the other side, at the other side of the shop. Into a pram on the way out or something like this. That wasn't a supermarket scene. That was more in a fashion drapery.
Superintendent Tom Kelly of the Garda Síochána says...
Well, we'd find it very difficult to distinguish the professional from the one who may steal property in a shop for necessity or other obvious reasons. We know that, for example, in the year 1975, there were 3,225 offences of that type reported to the guards. And there is no immediate means of distinguishing the professional, the one who would steal, perhaps to sell again, from the person who stole, perhaps because of an immediate want in some other area.
But something like a pot of yoghurt in a supermarket is obviously something very small. What about the person who maybe clears an entire rail in a department store? Would they not be considered professionals and the others amateurs?
Yes, I think the professional conjures up immediately the idea of a receiver behind the scene, somebody to whom the property can be immediately sold or otherwise disposed of. No doubt that class of shoplifter does exist, but it's not always possible, except with a very searching investigation in some cases, it's not always possible to discover if in fact there is such a background to the theft.
Outside the big urban centres, the problem is lighter, as one shopkeeper reported.
Well, as regards the small suburban shop, newsagent, cigarettes, sweets and paper bags, the amount of shoplifting that goes on is not very large by modern-day standards. There's always a certain amount of shoplifting of bars of chocolate and maybe paper bags, but cigarettes very little, of course, because they're in behind the counter and that's it. And overall, I think the amount of shoplifting generally in small suburban shop is pretty low. Mostly because no matter what time you go in, there's always somebody behind the counter to serve and keep an eye out. And this generally stops a terrible lot of shoplifters. Once they think that a pair of eyes are on them, they don't bother very much. It's in the supermarkets and larger stores where they get away from staff that they're inclined to pick up stuff and not put them back down again. If you go in for a lot of the impulse sales effort, it means that you have to have your goods on open display. And of course, by doing that, you take the chance of shoplifting, and you probably realise that there will be an amount of shoplifting, and it's built into your prices in quite a lot of places. But with the open display sort of thing, you run the risk of the thing getting out of hand before you realise it, until it suddenly shows up in your figures and you find you've been standing around for quite a while and nothing coming back to you.
Children can be a problem, and there can be problems with their parents.
I think the guards have different rules of their own. If they have certain rules regarding children, for instance, and they don't necessarily take them to court, but they have a situation where they're taken into a room with the superintendent on the first offence or the second offence and ticked off. I think we also find the situation where the reaction of parents to children being caught is very different. Some parents react very strongly, how dare you accuse my little boy, even though it's very obvious and they know he's been caught. Other parents come down and say, we are very grateful to you for catching him at this early age, because we didn't know there was a problem there, we'll now work on it. And it is interesting to see the concerned parents and those who are very defensive and believe that he couldn't do it, that he couldn't make that mistake, and who automatically blame the supermarket and say, well, look, you shouldn't allow children in, you shouldn't allow goods to be placed in open display, you shouldn't put temptation in somebody's way. And I think they have a point. Mm. The difficulty is when we go to children and say, sorry, we'd prefer you didn't come into the shop, we never know what sort of reaction we'll get from the parents. We do have fairly tight rules and fairly strong rules about groups of children coming in order to avoid groups coming in just to wander around the place, and that obviously puts temptation in their way, because yes, one says to the other, go on, you have a go at it, and this sort of
thing. Anyway, they get in everybody's way if there are gangs of them going around.
Yes, well, I'm not even thinking of gangs, but very often you'd have, coming back from school, one has to do some shopping for his mother and or her mother, and £3 or £4 will come in with them. Mm. We usually ask the one to come in on his or her own and the others to stay to stay outside.
Keeping some children out can call for a bit of toughness on the part of store detectives.
Can you get outside the door for me, don't I bring you?
She's got one now.
My knees are knocking.
I said no.
Superintendent Kelly?
Well, there is, of course, a very well-known drill within the force now, which applies to young people involved in crime, where if it is their first offence and if it's clearly established that they have, in fact, committed it, they admit it and the property is returned and the offended person doesn't wish to see a proceeding, we can deal with them by way of caution and put them under a form of probation, as it were, for a few years afterwards. That's still done. It's done in shoplifting crimes, as in any other crime in which a young person is involved.
Are there very many children actually at it?
Again, the figures don't show how many of the offences reported to us, for example, in the latest year for which we have figures, that's 1975. They don't show how many of them were children. We merely have the number of offences reported to the guards. It would be fair to say this is a good proportion. The crime, indictable crime in this country, by the way, as a whole, show that about 25% of it is committed by people under the age of 17. So you could reasonably assume that of the total shoplifting offences committed in Ireland in any one year, 25% of them are committed by those under 17.
Many people, of course, have at some time or other had the fear of being wrongfully accused of shoplifting. Michael Campbell, chief executive of Mace Marketing in Ireland, comments on the dangers of wrongful accusation.
If in doubt, don't apprehend. And certainly our guide to our members would be that unless you are absolutely 101% sure, you do not apprehend, because where you're talking about something as serious as prosecution, you can't be half right or three quarter right. So I'm sure that, again, most of our retailers realise that if in doubt, do nothing. And they go out of their way, if they do see a potential shoplifter, to scrutinise them completely so that if somebody is apprehended, they are absolutely sure that it is a correct case. But the rule of thumb is beware of the dangers of, and the injustice, perhaps, of wrongful apprehension, and don't go near the person.
It worries the people in the stores too.
One of the very first cases of shoplifting I had at a very early stage in my own career, seeing a lady place a very large jar of Bovril into her pocket. I remember at that stage it was 10 sixpence worth, which was a huge amount of money for somebody, and it must have been a very big pocket. And we didn't sell 10 and sixpenny Bovrils too often. We only had two or three in the shelf. And seeing her put it in her pocket and getting very worried about what to do and deciding that we would have to challenge her once she left the shop. And just as I built up to do it, the one of the assistants came running around to say he'd found the 10 and sixpenny Bovril at the other side of the shop over on top of the detergents. In other words, the customer who had, the shoplifter who had decided to take it, had a change in conscience at the other side of the shop, or for whatever reason, maybe she thought she'd been seen, changed her mind and decided not to take it at all. Now, the serious implications there would be in that had we challenged her, we would have been very seriously guilty, and we would have been guilty because she wasn't, in fact, shoplifting on the occasion. And ever since then, I've certainly been very aware that if you see somebody, you really have to watch them to make sure they don't change their mind afterwards.
There must be no doubt whatsoever as to what has taken place. If they observe a customer conceal an item, they must know what that item is, where it is concealed. Because you can have the situation where potential shoplifters will take items, put them into a bag or into their coat pocket, particularly in supermarkets. They'll walk around a corner, they're out of sight for maybe only 10-15 seconds, and for some reason or other they decide they don't want the item that they have taken. Now, they're not going to go back to where they have originally taken the item from. They put it down amongst the cornflakes, the jams, the jellies. And if the store detective misses that and subsequently follows the customer outside the store and arrests them, they're in extremely serious trouble.
When do the challenges or arrests take place?
Usually we pick them up either in the fitting room or outside the shop. There has been a worry. A lot of retailers feel that they cannot touch anybody within their own premises. This is not so. You can, in fact, if the intention has been to remove the garment without paying for it, you can, or the goods without paying, you can apprehend them in your own store.
Noella Price of Open Till 8 Boutique, and from Pauline O'Neill of Store Security.
It's all in the approach and how you suggest to the person that they've taken something. And if you tell them something that, you know, they've taken, then 9 times out of 10 they'll just say, I'm sorry, and they come back. You will get the odd one, but basically they run away. You don't have any worries about putting your hand on them because you can't catch them.
By law, you're entitled to stop a person once they have passed the point of sale. Now, to bring a case to court on those grounds, you'd be leaving yourself very open. And the only way to be 100% sure is let the person walk out onto the street, and in fact let them, if possible, walk some distance away from the store, so there can be absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind that the person had no intention to pay for the item at all.
Of course, prevention is better than cure, and the guards advise...
Prevention, of course, is the obvious advice in the case of any crime, and with the property displayed, so obviously in shops and stores and supermarkets, clearly it's a case where prevention can have its own special reward. To prevent it, of course, would involve a very efficient training of staffs, so that they would know how to, first of all, how to observe the goings-on of customers, when they should become suspicious, what they would do, what drill should be followed in particular cases where their suspicion is well established, and indeed it may go so far as to training them as to how they should in fact approach a suspect shoplifter, what questions they would put, and that type of procedural training generally would be, I think, very useful if major stores adopted it for their staffs.
And now Michael Campbell.
Our policy, very simply, is where possible, deterrent, and put in as many preventatives to shoplifting happening rather than try and solve the problem afterwards. So the mirrors which show the aisles in the shop and the low shelves are all part of this deterrent, and the manager having his office so that he overlooks his shop. But in essence, to deter, we feel, is far better than to try and solve the problem afterwards.
Is apprehension an even bigger problem for somebody who is liable to know all his customers?
Well, we have an advantage there because, as most Mays shops are situated in rural communities, they have they know their customers. So in large areas, thousands of people can go through a shop, you don't really know them. But the Mays grocer, in fact, does probably know 90 or 95% of the people going into his shop. So he starts off with an advantage, we feel.
Is the mirror the major deterrent, or do you have others?
Well, the mirror, I mean, in some shops they would use television cameras, but in essence, there isn't any substitute for people watching the customers, watching potential shoplifters.
And I asked Noella Price if she has a security system.
Yes, we've recently installed a security system, and we have found that it has reduced the losses by about 75%. That does not mean it cuts it out entirely, but certainly they have been dramatically reduced. The main security system that is installed in most shops, not in department stores, I presume for the cost reason, is too high, but in smaller shops at any rate, is an electronic activated magnet type tag which is attached to the garment, not on the seams, but on the main body of the garment, in my case a garment, so that it cannot be removed by a thief.
Of course, there can be a lighter side.
There's a well-known retailer in Dublin who recently installed a security system in his own shop, which happens to be a very long, narrow establishment in the leading shopping street in Dublin. As he walked in the door of his own shop, there were two well-dressed housewives coming out, one carrying a handbag, another a very small plastic bag, and the security system went off. None of his staff raised their eyebrows, and he looked at the two ladies and gauged that the system must have been working, decided to follow them. He followed them up the stairs of one of the leading department stores in the country to the fourth floor, where they sat down and had a cup of coffee. he approached them and was very careful not to specify that he considered that they had taken something. He merely said that he was afraid that the assistant had forgotten to remove the security tag and that when they got home, they wouldn't be able to take it off and hence would be unable to wear the garment. They initially were blustering and saying that no way had they been in his shop, but while he was talking, he was bending down and happened to put his hand into the plastic bag and, of course, removed a dress which had a tag on it. Then they agreed with him that in their own interests, they would come back and have the tag removed. When they got to the bottom of the third floor escalator, of course, one went in one direction and the other went in the other direction. My friend proceeded down, as he said, through four floors of this leading department store with an unwrapped garment over his arm. Nobody accosted him in the store. He went out through the front door. Nobody stopped him. He went into his own shop, which is three or four doors away. His security system again went off. Again, none of his staff raised an eyebrow. He went down to the back of the shop, threw the garment on the counter, and was about to bawl hell out of his own assistants when he discovered that, in fact, the dress was from another shop altogether.
Well, presumably, the alarm system had also gone off. Red faces all round. But the red faces are most often on the detective shoplifters, who offer all sorts of excuses.
Well, various excuses. Firstly, you get tablets, you know, Valium or something like that.
And it's always a sort of semi-hard luck story?
Basically, yeah, basically.
Do you usually believe it?
Not really. Sometimes, perhaps.
Some people say you shouldn't prosecute pregnant women. I don't necessarily agree with that, because I have seen pregnant women being apprehended with considerable amounts of merchandise. And it doesn't go down to the fact that they are pregnant, that women do strange things when they're pregnant. These have been calculated shopping trips where they have gone out to steal.
I don't listen to any stories. I go straight out, ring the guards, and they are down very efficiently within 10 minutes.
This talk of kleptomania, something I really wouldn't claim to know anything about. A psychiatrist would claim that there is such a disease and that people find difficulty in stopping, and I'm sure they're right. I wouldn't claim to be an expert. One little rule I have, or had in the past, doesn't apply now, was I used to notice that if we saw shoplifters, they very often were smoking. Now, we don't have smoking in our shops nowadays, but very often it almost ended in a situation whereby if you saw somebody smoking in the shop, and we used to permit smoking in the shops, if you saw somebody smoking in the shop, you almost got suspicious, which is most unfair. I think the situation would be that people were worried, concerned,
yes,
wary, and needed to relax a little bit if they were planning to do it, and therefore were tempted to smoke. Mm-hmm. Since smoking is now discouraged in practically all food shops, I suppose that clue doesn't arise. But I think that would show you that even those who were shoplifting were certainly worried. It is a high tension thing.
Kleptomania? Well, does it exist? Psychiatrist Dr. Harry Crawley.
Well, I think it would be better to say that there are various causes which have perhaps the basis in psychological disorder why people may steal things. Certainly they're not, of course, the explanation of all stealing. Kleptomania is usually reserved for a disorder in which there is a perpetual compulsion to steal, and the stealing in many ways is irrational because the person doesn't appear to gain from the theft and in fact needs to obtain some object, often any object. Frequently doesn't attempt to resell it or to benefit from it, but hides it away again. It is frequently thought that the basis of kleptomania, which occurs more commonly in children than in adults, is some form of affection stealing, so that the object is an affectional substitute.
Then that is something that one could almost leave aside. Well, then what is the psychiatric basis for people who shoplift? Do the people who do it fall into various categories?
Well, insofar as there's a common thread, you can say that the basis is that the behaviour for the person represents a deviation which for them is completely inconsistent with their previous personality and character. Now, there are various types of people who shoplift. One group are women in middle age. This, I think, has been fairly well established. Frequently who appear to have depression and who have no history previously of theft. who don't necessarily take very much, and often what they take is of little value and is even irrational. They may take items which obviously couldn't be of any further value to them. As I say, subsequently it has been discovered that they have been suffering from depressions at this time. Now, there are other explanations why, but that's one type of group. Some children, particularly children with a deprived background, who have either lost their parents or have, in one way or another, lack of affection early in life, an affectional sort of basis for their emotional life, appear to be more inclined to shoplift. Handicapped children can be more inclined to shoplift as well. Sometimes, of course, they can be exploited by others, and simply in this kind of Fagin type of Oliver Twist type of story situation can be used merely by others as shoplifters. The other associations really would be excitement, for one thing, can be a basis in the sense that the actual challenge of being able to do this and get away with it may be stimulating particularly to a young child. And it can be a way of drawing attention to a problem in somebody who actually has no clear insight into the fact that they need help, but has an unconscious awareness of the fact that they need in some way to have their problems brought to attention. And therefore one would feel that the basis there is the wish to be caught rather than the wish to actually acquire something. All these things seem to mix together in producing different types of psychological basis.
A shoplifter is caught. But are shoplifters always handed over to the guards? What, for example, would make Pauline O'Neill take this action?
Well, attitude mostly, depending on how they react to what has happened. If they, you know, persist in denying it, then naturally we have to take them to the police station to safeguard ourselves. Hmm. But if they're sorry and things like that, then we let them go, you know.
And they don't make a fuss?
Well, most of them don't make a fuss, depending on how you approach them outside, you know.
We found a situation whereby we had a number of shoplifting cases. Some of them appear to be very sad. The wife of a man who was just going for promotion, who was well known in that particular community, and he could be a teacher or a manager or somewhere, to whom his wife appearing in the court was going to do considerable damage to him. And next to him was somebody who was unimportant, and who's perhaps came from a community where it wouldn't be regarded as being very important to be caught shoplifting. And there was obviously a temptation to say, well, the amount of damage you do to one family is far more than the amount of damage you do to the other. And on that situation, you would almost find yourself tempted to say, well, let's not prosecute one, and, you know, we should go ahead and prosecute the other because they've done a lot of shoplifting. And suddenly that situation was terribly serious, because here I personally was lying awake at night trying to decide what should we do. You can see that the main danger there is that I would end up as a judge in deciding. And
Before it ever got to court.
And not only that, but I would end up as a judge biased almost because on the amount of damage it would do to one family as against another. So, excuse me, on the basis of that, having thought it out, and really, to be quite fair, having lain awake on a number of nights knowing the amount of damage that was doing, I made a decision personally that in future we would hand over every case to the guards. We would say to the guards, this is a case that we have seen. You make a decision as to whether to prosecute or not.
We have an absolute policy of prosecution. We never listen to any stories. In fact, I just don't listen. We find a customer either through a one-way mirror or through girls keeping their eyes open, has put a garment in her bag or concealed it about her person and has no intention of paying for it. And whether she's in or out of the shop makes very little difference. If the intention has been to remove a garment from the premises without paying for it, the judge will stand over that.
And the guard's viewpoint?
Well, the groundwork is usually, of course, done by the manager or the staff member or perhaps the security employee of the business concerned. The observation has been made by him or her, that security officer or employee. The physical evidence, that is the property which has been stolen or suspected to have been stolen, is usually seized or forthcoming. The person involved is usually identified. And, in fact, in many cases, the manager or person in charge of the premises has spoken to the suspect and has decided on his line of action. At that stage, the guards are informed. I just mentioned that to show you that the machinery of the law has, in fact, been put in motion when the guards are called, and it's their duty, clearly, in law, to deal with the person in accordance with the law, and that involves pursuing the ordinary drill for the charging and releasing on bail or remanding in custody of an ordinary arrested person. So they take the person to the Garda station with the security officer or witness who detected the offence in the first instance. They also bring the property involved. And from there on, the drill, as I said, is pursued in the same way as any other crime. The person is questioned, the statement is taken from the witnesses, the property is retained, and charge sheets prepared, and the person released on bail or in custody, remanded in custody in appropriate cases.
Les McLinden is not altogether satisfied with what happens when shoplifters are taken to court.
Because in this country we still work with the Larceny Act of 1916, whereas in the UK they have the Theft Act of 1968, which allows the same onus isn't put on the person prosecuting to prove the case, whereas under the Larceny Act we're rather constricted, or restricted, I should say. First offenders normally get the Probation Act or possibly a small fine. Habitual offenders will possibly get a larger fine or a prison sentence. There doesn't seem to be any uniformity in the sentences handed out in the courts.
Presumably you would like to see uniformity.
Exactly.
That everybody knows when they set out to shoplift what's going to happen if
right.
they get caught.
I don't think the penalties are strong enough. I don't certainly advocate that everybody should be sent to prison or anything like that. But I do feel that if a person is going to go out, set out to steal, and if they are caught, that the only place that you're going to really hurt them is in their pocket.
A district justice, however, suggested to me that there's nothing really to get too alarmed about. He's of the opinion that, apart from the professional shoplifters, who are always sent to jail when they're apprehended, amateur shoplifting is no greater problem than it was about 10 years ago. He's found that, by and large, the lifters fall into a number of fairly easily classifiable categories. First of all, there are some of the summer visiting students. They take the chance because they know that they can only be sent home, and what they're liable to have fallen for is a tartan kilt. Then there's the housewife who comes into Dublin City from a neighbouring county, maybe Westmeath or Kildare. She's usually accompanied, either by a daughter or by a friend, and she runs out of money before her day's shopping's completed, so she decides to lift. Then there's the man, usually on a Saturday afternoon. He's thrown out of the pub for the holy hour and decides to fill in the time, and his free purchase is likely to be a sports jacket. And there's the woman in need, whose husband is out of work. All of these cases are liable to be dealt with lightly by the courts and have the Probation Act applied. And according to the justice, he's most unlikely to see that offender back in court again. The professionals, however, are a different matter, and they can get stiff sentences, if they're caught. But overall, says this justice, and he suggests that his colleagues would agree, honesty is a thing of the past. People are inclined to regard the cost of living and inflation as justification for getting round paying for items. And also people, particularly young people, want more in material terms, and not being able to afford it is no deterrent. Ally that to modern shop layout, says the justice, and there you have your shoplifting problem. In the basic business of preventing shoplifting, certainly in the larger stores, the security person or store detective plays a major role. What makes a good one?
Good store detectives are very difficult to get. They're sort of a breed unto themselves. Naturally, they have to be observant. They've got to have confidence in themselves. They must be capable of making or working on their own, making decisions, making the right decisions, and making them quickly. They must have a great deal of patience. They can spend at times considerable periods keeping a suspect under observation. They must be 100% sure of their facts.
it's an a built-in thing. It's not. You can't be thought to be a store detective. You within the first week, you either make it or you don't make it. And I think generally people who are not going to make it know themselves before the 3 months training or whatever it is, month 3 months is up, and they generally leave. And the ones who stay are the ones who make it.
Store detectives seem to be mainly girls, and the younger girls at that.
Well, again, there's no hard and fast rule. We come in various sizes and builds, as I'm sure you've noticed. No, I think it's a dedication, really, that matters more than anything else. You either like what you do or you don't like it. There's no in-between. There's no, you know, I stay at it because. You either like it or you don't like it, and that's it.
Without trying to be dramatic, can it be dangerous? Do people accused of shoplifting ever get heavy?
They do, sometimes, but I've been lucky. But a lot of other girls haven't been. And it can be a tough job, it can be dangerous. And it's not always an easy job, as easy as it seems to be. But again, it's a job that's necessary.
The unfortunate situation at the moment is the violence that has come into shoplifting now. It has created a lot of problems for the people working on the ground because they have only limited means of taking action in situations where people become violent. They don't have the same powers as the police, and therefore they're treading on very thin ice at times.
Well, what are the limited parts? What can a store detective do when they see somebody actually taking something?
They have what is known as citizen's arrest. This means that they can arrest a person where they know a crime has been committed, whereas a policeman is more in the situation where he can arrest a person where he has a suspicion of a crime having been committed. Then there's great, of course, difference here.
You mentioned violence. How violent? Is it just somebody throwing a punch, or is it liable to be worse than that?
It can be worse than that. In fact, we had an incident recently where a well-known shoplifter, in fact, produced a knife to a security officer. These attacks, of course, are becoming more frequent. Not only are we talking about a punch being thrown at somebody, but in general, security people are subjected to a great deal of abuse, and they're spat upon. Every effort is made to humiliate them, and they work under very trying circumstances at times.
Would this be by professionals or by just casual?
A mixture of both, in fact. The abuse and violence.
The crime scene, which embraces both shoplifting and stealing by employees, causes losses totalling around £1 million a year in the retail grocery trade alone. And in one woman's fashion boutique,
a good year for us is £2,000 at retail, and a bad year is £5,000. And we are doing in the region of £100,000 a year turnover. So we're talking between 2 and 5%.
So how many cases a day does that represent in a major store for a store detective?
Well, you could have anything from 1 to 8 to 10. It would depend on the size of the store and the day, of the time of the year, if you like, and how many people are in the store.
But you're most unlikely to be hanging around for a week without seeing anybody
shoplifting. Oh, yes, very unlikely. In fact, it rarely happens.
It's big business.
Oh, it's big business, yeah, all round.
That's Viewpoint.
Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.